Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right, Bill Rock, thank you very much. And hello, everybody. It is Friday, 9 minutes after 8 o'clock. And hello, Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Good morning. I was introduced as a special co-host. That sounds impressive.
Well, you're an impressive
employee. I'll tell my mother I finally graduated to this. How are you?
How's life? It's been a busy week.
Looking forward to Thanksgiving. Hope the weather next week is as good as this week. It's perfect for fall weather. You can't ask for anything better.
No, it's absolutely spectacular.
Weekend's supposed to be good. I remember Thanksgivings. I remember sometimes, I always go to watch the balloons being blown up, and some years it has been so cold, you start shivering no matter how much clothes, and other years it's been great. If it was like now, it would be perfect.
We will have to wait and see no matter what. It is always just what it is, Thanksgiving and a great time.
We don't have a lot of control over the weather, are you saying that?
No, I was going to say exactly that. You might have some control over some things, but the weather is one of them.
But I get blamed when it's bad.
You do, and yeah. You have taken credit many times. Here, when
that would be wrong. That would be wrong.
Okay, let's. We got to start with the big story this morning. Of course, the announced budget cuts. It's not as if we hadn't heard about this before.
The city's tax revenues, because of a down economy, aren't big enough to support the kinds of services that we want to provide. And in government, unlike in other parts of the world, when the economy slows down and your revenues go down, the demand for services go up. More people need help. And you have to plan for that in advance. We've been doing that for a long time, but it's never enough. The future is always full of uncertainties. And so we're trying to get ahead of the game. We announced some cuts, $1.6 billion in new gap closing measures, $600 million for this year, $1 billion for next year. And that brings our total of budget closing things over the years to something like $5 billion. People say, well, if you're always cutting, how come the budget keeps growing? Well, there are increases, the cost of supplies, cost of labor. We have labor contracts that have built-in escalators. Teachers, for example, who I think are as important to our future as any group there you could possibly. The rest of us work for today. The teachers work for the future. But they do get step functions going up over the 20 years or something like that of 3.5% a year. Firefighters, police officers have the same thing, different kind of schedule, but you get paid more if you have more seniority. And I don't happen to think there's anything wrong with that. That's why next year, if we were to cut 3%, we still may go up if our expenses are going up more than 3%, and we may have fewer people and provide fewer services, but you still have that
and
to deal with.
And, of course, the gorilla in the room, the 800-pounder, is the pensions, which continue to go up astronomically.
Our pension system, when I came into office, cost us $1.5 billion. Today it's $7.5 billion, all because of things built into the budget. Not 100% due to Albany. We can't blame them 100%. But there is a lot of that they keep giving benefits that we have to pay for. We also, another reason it's up is because of the stock market going down. The returns on the pension system are negative. And so we've got to put in more money for that. And then also we've got to prepare for the fact that the actuary says we can't possibly make the assumptions that are in there. There's an assumption of 8%, and nobody makes 8% over a long period of time, not if they're honest. And so we've got to put that and factor that in. And all of it says we're going to have a tough time. Now, these $1.6 billion cuts still leave us with a $2 billion deficit. The process is in November, the mayor, by law, has to make modifications to the budget, and that's what we're doing for the next 6 months, cutting things that we had not cut 6 months ago at the beginning of the year, and then proposing cuts for the next fiscal year. Right now, even though the calendar says 2010, to make life complex, we're in fiscal 2011. Next June of 2011, we will start fiscal 2012, and we have $1 billion cuts in that. It reduces headcount, our budget cuts, because 80% of what we do is pay people salaries and health and pension benefits. So you cannot reduce your expenses without doing that. We try to do it through attrition, but sometimes the people that retire or resign aren't the people or are in places where you need them and you need their function to be filled. So it doesn't always help you, but we now have a little less than 300,000 employees, and that's before any reductions that we just announced, so it'll be even lower than that. And we're going to have to, in January, come up with a proposed budget called an executive budget, which actually balances the budget. So somehow or other in January, we've got to come up with $2 billion more in tax revenues, fee revenues, that sort of thing, or in cuts, or what's more likely, some combination. And another thing that makes it hard is that this current year we have, for example, $800 million in stimulus funds to help our school system. We know we're not going to get that next year. We have $650 million in school aid from the state, and we're going to have our local state senators and assembly. Our state representatives are going to have to work very hard to make sure we don't get cut more. We cannot. I mean, that, you're talking about 20, 30,000 teachers, which obviously we are not going to cut.
This time around, 6,000, right?
This time around, some of that will be attrition, some of it will be not, and we'll have to work with. You know, I thought Michael Mulgrew, the union leader of the UFT, said it very well. He said, you know, we understands the real world. We've got to find a ways to keep a great teacher in front of every child. Now, are the class sizes going to get smaller? No. But we are going to put a great teacher in front of every kid. Will we have a lot more cops? No, but we're going to have some more because we've got to keep crime down. We're not going to have every firehouse open all the time, but we will keep the city safe. Deaths by fires keep coming down. And I think by acting responsibly, we can continue to keep the services people need and balance the budget. Unlike the state and unlike the federal government, we have to balance our budget on an accrual basis, plain and simple. We even have to have roughly $500 million as a reserve sitting there in case 6 months after the end of the year, the accountants say, oh, we think you should have treated something different. So, you know, it's going to be a great challenge. We've reduced the budget proposed deficit, or the projected is a better word, not proposed, from $3.3 to $2.4 billion. But we still have a long ways to go, and you can rest assured most of November and December and January will be spent talking about the budget. And then we can talk about the budget for the executive budget, that's just a prelude to what the city council adopts in June. And everybody already is saying, oh, you can't cut this, you can't cut that. Okay, we're down to, we've had 9 programs to eliminate the gap. I'm sure there's somebody scamming the system, but it's very small. I'm sure there's some things where we do, and you could say, look, we just shouldn't be doing these things, but it's very small. Fundamentally, the city government is run efficiently, and when you say, well, I don't like all the money we're spending, and I say, okay, John, which your programs, I'll cut those. Oh, no, don't cut mine, cut the other guys.
Well, that's what you're getting this morning in response to yesterday's announcement. The people involved with the libraries are yelling, Stephen Cassidy, the fire department, about the closings at night in some
firehouses. Well, keep in mind, a union leader's job is to not defend the city, it's to defend the union. That's what they're hired to do. Nothing wrong with that, incidentally. Well, I happen to think, if I were a union member and my president said, well, I'm trying to do something else other than get me the best working conditions and the most money, and you know what, why would I wouldn't hire him?
But I think the continuing harangue, and this is a little off the topic here, but I think the continuing harangue of organized labor towards cuts generically is starting to wear thin on the public that's paying the freight.
Well, that may be, but let me give you another view of it, because I have never blamed. I get criticized for this all the time. I don't blame the unions for our problem. The union's job, as I said, is to ask for as much as they can get. Nothing wrong with that. That's a normal thing. It is the government that has granted them things that we can't afford. Government has to stand up and say, no, I'm sorry. And they say, well, we'll support your opponent when you run. Okay, support my opponent. That's not my job. My job is not to get reelected. My job, first and foremost, is to do a good job. And I think that the union leaders, by and large, in the city, municipal unions and the private sector unions, by and large, are very responsible. They understand. And incidentally, as do their members. You know, when you talk to a cop on the beat, He understands there isn't a lot of money for raises going forward. When you talk to a teacher, a firefighter, or you know somebody that works in an office, we have lots of people nobody even talks about. Most of them represented by DC 37. They have 1,000 different titles, and they do all different things, which we need. And DC 37 has this slogan, "Everyday's Heroes." In some senses, I don't like. I think we overuse the word hero, but these are people who make this city work. And nothing wrong with them asking for more. My job's to say no. Is it popular? No, but that's why I get paid the big bucks. And I got paid last week. Eat your heart out.
You got you what? 97 cents?
93 cents. They take out FICA. Yep. It's another check I'm framing.
You're taking somebody to lunch or for
No, them? I've got them all framed. Well, this one hasn't gone to the framer yet, but I will.
All right. Mr. Mayor, hang on. Let me take a break right here. We will come back. Don't forget, if you've got a question for the mayor, we will get you in line. You need to call, though, 800-321-0710. 800-321-0710. Coming right back.
Mayor Mike and John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
25 minutes after 8 o'clock, we're getting some people up on the line here in the queue, 800-321-0710, if you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg. We were talking about all the cuts and everything, but...
Yeah, but the other side is it shows in the city's numbers. Tourism is a record high. We're going to have 47 million visitors this year. Hotel occupancy is up 7%, even though we have an extra 7,500 rooms this year. And that's more rooms than...
Most cities have.
Double and triple what most cities have, big, even good-sized cities. And the job numbers were just, you know, shows we have a long ways to go, but we're doing so much better. Our unemployment rate fell to, I think it was like 9.2%, down from 10.4% back in October of 2009. We're way below the national rate, which is 9.6%. And the growth was not, Wall Street did a little bit of growth, but it was in all, you know, used to joke and doctor off about five-borough economic diversification plan. Now you're seeing it. It is in all the other industries that are creating the jobs in this city. And we've created jobs 2.5 times as fast as the rest of the nation. These aren't public sector jobs. These are private sector
jobs. Do you think it's across the spectrum of jobs, or is it different?
It's across the spectrum. A little bit in finance. That's the big gorilla.
Sure.
So that you can't do it without that. But we added 42,000 jobs in October, private sector jobs, which is more than double what's been typical for October's over the last decade. So we got to be doing something right now. Next month, you still hold your breath and see what it's going to be next month. But what we've got to do is keep doing the same things. City's got to be safe. Got to be a great teacher in front of every kid. Got to have the streets cleaned. Got to obey the laws and have fire and police and ambulances show up. Got to make sure that when you apply for a permit or have to deal with the city, it's as efficient as we can make it. All those things we're working on. And you got to have the right people. And the people can't be picked on, well, I like somebody or not like somebody. We've got to have the right people, and that's why I'm really excited about Joel Klein's replacement, Kathy Black. Not happy Joel wanted to go to the private sector. He had originally, when I first got him, we said 8 years. We laughed about it. Nobody thought there'd be 12 possible. And then when we had a third term, he said, look, he wanted to go in the private sector. I think he maybe just gets a little bit burnt out. This is a guy who works 7 days a week, and gets beaten up all the time. This is one of the toughest jobs in the world. And so I'm a little bit sympathetic. I can't say that. He'll say, oh, you see. But he really did do amazing things for the city. And finding somebody who's tough and smart to do this. This is a management job.
Let me ask you the question. We've heard the criticism on a daily basis since you announced Kathy Black as the replacement. Some accusations say there was no search at all.
Oh, no. Joel and I worked on this very hard for a long time. You don't do searches in public. I can't call you up and say, John, I'd like you to come to work for the city. And you say, well, what about my boss? Oh, your boss will see it in the paper that you're looking. Good. Good luck in going back to work the next day. And incidentally, if we interview a bunch of people, only one's going to get the job. The other's going to be unemployed. Nobody talks to you. Nobody does a search that way. So that's ridiculous. I would really urge everybody listening to read the Times profile on Kathy Black. Front page story.
Paper.
Front page story and an enormous jump in the middle of the paper. And this is not a newspaper that's exactly been, at least on the news side, sympathetic to her appointment. But even they show that she is just an incredibly accomplished woman, has managed large, complex organizations, incredible success, and she's exactly the right person to lead this organization. The Department of Education spends $22 billion a year, has something like 135,000 employees, 2,000-odd buildings, 1,100,000 kids, and in a world where they're going to have $800 million less in stimulus money, where we're going to have to fight like heck to keep our state aid, where our costs keep going up, where we get more kids with special needs and English language learners, this is one of the toughest jobs in the country. And, you know, we've made so much progress. Our kids' futures are at stake. You don't want somebody not based on, well, they feel good. You want somebody that's been there, done that, tough. Now, you're never going to find anybody that's ran an organization that size. But you do want to have somebody who's ran a big organization, made tough decisions. You know, one business, another business, they're not always the same. You have to have somebody who will build a staff. I'm very concerned. I want to make sure all the people that Joel put together stick around.
Or yeah, most because of that's them. A tough thing.
You know, there'll be some turnover. There's always some. Somebody said, oh, you know, two people quit. Well, one quit the day before anybody knew about Kathy Black, so that had nothing to do with it. And I don't know. I didn't talk to the other one. But yeah, these are people. Other people around the country are coming after our people because they're the best. And I don't want them to leave. So you have to have somebody who they look up to and respects, where they get a chance to work with somebody who they never otherwise would have, who they know will support them. And I listened to the radio. Governor-elect Cuomo pointed out that it is very difficult now. All of a sudden, he can't announce his team because he can't get people. Maybe don't want to overstate that, but it's hard to get people to go to work for the state government. Who wants to go to work where you get beaten up by the legislators every day? You can't do that.
And that was an interesting admission on the governor-elect's part.
Andrew Cuomo is very realistic. I mean, he didn't create this problem; he inherited it. But I thought he was dead right in pointing this out. It's become a sport to try to tear people down. That go to work in government, and particularly if they've worked in other areas. And that's just not doesn't get you good people. And then Andrew's going to have to convince people that he will protect the people that come to work for him. Nobody wants to work for an organization where their boss, the instant they make a small mistake, throws them to the wolves. And, you know, I've known Andrew for a long time. He's very smart, and he understands that. And I think that is the kind of boss he'll be. And if you are being considered for a job, I trust you are not, because I want to come every Friday. But regardless,
as far as I know,
I mean,
he's
certainly, you know, working for Andrew Cuomo would be a pretty good gig, I would think. He's got to make sure he delegates and then protects when you screw up a little bit. I mean, if you do something really wrong, then no. But what we've got to do, our question here in the city is how you continue to keep the progress going in education. We don't want to go back on our reforms. This is mayoral control and accountability. And I made a promise to the people that I would improve the schools. And during 9 years, I think we've delivered on that progress. We've not promised. We're not where we want to be. But we're going to keep doing it. And Kathy Black is exactly the right person to do it. And, when you listen to people that are criticizing her, these are the same people that opposed mayoral control. They opposed every reform we've ever put through. There's some elected officials, one guy I saw, he did a poll to find out where he stands. Great, great. That's really a great, that shows your real leadership and intellectual ability. We had, you know, the people, we had three former mayors, Giuliani, Koch, Dinkins, and Giuliani, all of whom, these are the people, incidentally. The reason we have mayoral control is all three of those guys fought for mayoral control. I happened to be at the right time and the right place, but it was done to a great extent because of them. They deserve a lot of the credit for improving the school systems because they gave us the tools to do it. And incidentally, my successor is going to have to carry on because there's always going to be more to do.
What has the state education commissioner said to you about the waiver?
We just sent a letter up there. I find it hard to, in the end, I mean, I think he'll have some questions. It's our job to point out that we have a great education team. You know, if your question is what kind of, should it be old math or new math, pedagogical questions, that's what you have a team for. The job of the leader, like my job's not to know how to stop the bad guy in the street or educate the kid or put out the fire. My job is to pick the people who will pick the people who will pick the people to do that job, to work together, and to, when the going gets tough, stick around. That's what the management job is. And people, the criticism of picking Kathy Black, well, she doesn't know anything about education, but she does know about management. She is a leader, and she will get the people under her, the education experts and the logistics experts and all of the other kinds of people that work in the Department of Ed to do it. This is, we need this woman, and I find it hard to believe, you know, what does it say? How would you get somebody else? I mean, I don't know what you'd do if you didn't. You would go, to say, well, you can joke, and somebody says to me, well, take 3 years for a search. I don't know why anybody would come if you didn't do this. Kathy Black is just absolutely qualified to run a large, complex organization. She's been doing it her whole life. And in the end, I think the state, you know, they're smart people, and they understand this is what Merrill Control is about. And we've shown picking. Keep in mind, Joel Klein needed a waiver. His predecessor, Levy, needed a waiver. The two predecessors earlier than that, Macchiarola, needed waivers. This is a job where, as long as you have some support, and we have a team already put together, and I'm trying to protect that team and make sure that team doesn't say, hey, I'm out of here. What do I need this aggravation for? I want that team to be excited and say, hey, what a wonderful. And you take a look at the new deputy mayors, whether it's Wolfson or Goldsmith or Steele, their teams, it's amazing for those people. They get a chance to work with somebody who comes from a very different world, which is going to help their careers and let them be more effective. And the cabinet, as they call it, the top people at the Department of Ed, they have all of the expertise, whether it's Rodriguez dealing with the special ed kids, or go right down the list of all of the different things they do. The team's in place, and you can't run the risk of pulling that apart by bringing in other outsiders. No, we're not going to do that.
All right, there's more with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, including you, 800-321-0710. We've run a little long, Mr. Mayor. Let's get to Joe Bartlett News. We're coming right back.
Give John a call now, 800-321-0710.
We continue with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. You will be part of it as well. Let me see here. 1, 2, 3, 4. We've got one line open, 800-321-0710. You were down in Washington. 9/11 health bill is going to happen. It looks like it might not.
Well, it was passed by the House. It now has to be passed by the Senate. If it could come to a vote, it would be passed very easily in the Senate. But the Senate has this thing where you can filibuster. In other words, you can keep talking forever. And the only way is to stop you from talking and let a vote take place is to have something called cloture. And that needs 60 votes to do it. We have 59. At least we think we do. I've got to get one more. And I was on the phones last night and continue to make calls. Nothing's going to happen until after Thanksgiving. So, you know,
is the ball in Mr. Schumer's court, Senator Schumer's court?
Senator Schumer's job is to deliver the Democrats, which he will do. Nobody is as tough or smart or as hardworking and as persuasive as Chuck. Chuck knows how to do that, and he will do it. And in all fairness, the other senator from New York, Kirsten Gillibrand, she's taken this on, and she doesn't stop. She just keeps calling me, please call this guy, do this guy, do that.
The opposition from the Republicans.
Well, everybody says it's only we got to find some ways to pay for it. Well, that's true, but that's true of everything that the federal government does. The cost of this bill has just really gone down by probably $700 million because I hope there are enough people, the judge won't tell us yet, but enough people that agreed to the settlement of these lawsuits. Which
that hasn't happened yet.
We're still waiting for the judge. But I'm optimistic, but you never know. And assuming that's done, then out of this captive fund, which the federal government
gave... You can't get
gave,
both.
No, you offset one. If the Zadroga bill was for more, you'd get the difference. You get it all, the first part from the settlement, and then the second part from reopening the victims' compensation fund, which is what the Zadroga bill does. And there's no good explanation. You know, we all have priorities, but if you just take a look at some of these people who are dying, they did what we asked them to do. You know, we have Good Samaritan laws. Good Samaritan law protects you if you go and do something, put your life at risk to help somebody else. And let's say, you know, if you pass out on the sidewalk and somebody tries to give you CPR and they do it wrong, they're protected. Nobody expects them to be a doctor, know everything, sometimes do it right, sometimes do it wrong, but you want them to try, and so you want to protect them. This is just protecting those people and the companies who sent their employees in. And if we don't do this, you know, suppose there's another disaster. What company would send their employees in if they know they're going to go into bankruptcy and everybody's going to lose their jobs? And that's what would happen here, that a lot of these companies just don't have the insurance, won't cover it, and so they're going to be in big trouble. And a lot of these people are dying, and the more we stretch this out, we are 9-plus years into the post-9/11 period, and we have yet to do something to take care of those who we said, quick, go down there and rescue people. And then when it turned out there was nobody more to rescue, stay down there and help us rebuild and recover their remains and rebuild the city. And they did. And they breathed air. Nobody ever experienced something like this, so they didn't know what the medical implications of it were. But we do. Today we know.
When's the vote going to be? Have they given you any indication?
Well, it has to be during this session,
so
because next time.
Before Christmas break.
Yeah, before the next break, and it's not going to take place till after Thanksgiving. And if there isn't enough votes, there won't be a vote. They just keep talking, and everybody eventually says, well, if we can't stop talking, we'll all stop talking and get on to another subject.
I got a lot of things, but I want to talk about this. You talked about, sadly, the death of a New York City police officer, Andre Menzio,
yep.
Who was hit by a drunken driver. There was, in the same time frame, an article about from your health commissioner on binge drinking and drinking in New York City. Extraordinary numbers.
Yeah, really scary.
I mean, really, really scary. You got? Does he have any good ideas here, or do we just
For the kids, the first thing is the parents. Parents have a responsibility. Then some kids don't have parents, so I don't know what you do there, but we have to find a ways.
These are adults, too, the statistics we're showing.
Yeah. I mean, look, I love to have a glass of wine. I love to have a beer. Don't drink a lot of hard liquor anymore. I used to, but I don't know, somehow or other, none of my friends do. But, you know, and it's, when it's hot, I like a beer with dinner and a glass of wine sometimes. Not sometimes, most nights. You know, if we're at a restaurant, I would normally order a glass of wine. But you can't, overdoing it just doesn't make any sense. And alcohol doesn't mix with automobiles. It doesn't mix with guns. I mean, you know, this just, it impairs your judgment, plain and simple, physical and mental. And so, you know, you probably shouldn't get drunk, but if you're going to do it, make sure somebody else is going to take you home and make sure you don't go near anything dangerous.
Scary stuff. I mean, obviously, and the consequences are deadly, literally. So the new cabs, interesting.
Taxi of tomorrow.
Yeah, you think it's going to happen? I mean, you think it's definitely going to happen?
Well, we said very carefully, if none of the three finalists come up with something that we think is acceptable.
I like that car van. Is that what it is?
Carsan. Yeah, it's Carsan, a Turkish company. Yeah. Ford and Nissan, the other companies. Seven companies competed. Three were picked as finalists. Not one of them is perfect. If they can't make something that is good for the public and affordable and good for the drivers and the owners, because then they won't use it otherwise, no, we're not going to go ahead. But we're somewhat optimistic. We have 13,000 cabs in the city. Already 4,000 are hybrids, so that's helping a little bit with pollution. Interestingly enough, not one manufacturer that submitted a response to our request for proposals makes a car in the United States. Ford is one of the people, but they make it, I think, in Canada. They're going to make it in Turkey. Crown Victoria, which we have a lot of, is made in Canada. But we want to see if there is no ways to get the public better service, less polluting, more comfortable, able to take, go down streets easier, carry your luggage, all of these things. And if we could get one company that would sell all the cabs, they would, you know, make a bigger investment in it. And also, if we have a good cab, the companies believe they could sell it to other cities.
Of course. I saw you with one of the crime fighters this week, Spider-Man. I thought that was...
Being an action hero, John, is tough. Eat your heart out.
I was wondering whether or not you ran into Batman along the same time.
I did not. I don't mix my heroes. There's a little bit of competition among these guys.
They don't like to be seen together.
Probably. Well, I didn't see them together, so I'd assume that.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we got some questions from the folks out there. We'll get to those in just a moment, 11 before 9 o'clock.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show. News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
6 before 9 o'clock, and it is your turn, Mr. Mayor. Let's go to the telephones here. We're going to start with Jackie. Hello, Jackie. You've got the mayor. Go.
Yes, good morning, Mayor.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Gambling. Just as you stood up to the firefighter unions, how come you can't stand up to the MTA and tell them to open up their books? If I was running my own private business, I kept on asking the city, please give me more money every 2 years, you would say to me, let's open up the books, see where you're going wrong, and let's fix up the situation.
Jackie, one minor problem. It's a state agency. The MTA, most people don't realize it, but it is a state agency. Now, I happen to think the guy running it is phenomenal, regardless, we have four seats. The city has four seats on the board of the MTA out of 16. And, regardless of whether we should or should not do anything, we don't have the ability. It's not our responsibility. It's up to the state. So if you think the state should be doing something, you call your assembly person or you call your state senator. And if you call 311, they'll figure out who it is for you and probably get your phone numbers. You call them or you call the governor. And you say, this is what I think you should do. But that's their responsibility. And I, if you remember back in 2001, originally thought that it would be great if the city could take over the MTA because it's such a big part of our city and our responsibility.
Still feel that way?
After 9/11, the economics changed. With you, yes, if you could guarantee the state giving you all the money, which they don't even do now. So no, you can't. You know, we need to spread. And also, there is another problem with the MTA and having the city control it. The MTA includes the Long Island Railroad, which goes out of the city through Nassau and Suffolk, and the MTA includes Metro North, which goes up through Westchester and actually even into Connecticut. So, you know, the problem of jurisdiction is a very serious one, and I don't know how you'd get around that. You could maybe carve out just the subways and buses, but we do have a lot of say, and we work very well with the MTA, and Jay Walder is phenomenal. But the answer here is it's just unfortunately, or fortunately, but factually, it's not us.
Jack, it's your turn with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Go ahead. Jack.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. My question is, Mr. Mayor, when you originally started a conversation with John, you expressed very, very specifically that the cuts that would be made would be such that the city would be able to remain safe, education would be able to remain of a quality stature. My question is, when, and I do believe the economy will turn around, if we're able to live within the confines of these cuts now and still purporting to the public the safety and the education, when things do turn around, do we leave things the way they are?
Well, the pressure, the way government works is when you have money, everybody wants to spend it. And the legislature keeps saying, you know, we can have an extra hour of open for the museum or a library. We can have an extra firehouse. We can have an extra cop on the beat. We can have smaller class sizes, all of those kinds of things. And the trouble is when you say, okay, we've got the money, we'll do it. The next year, if you don't have the money, you still have the obligation. And it's painful to cut back anything that you start. The state legislature keeps giving pension benefits when we, in good times, they even do it in bad times sometimes, but in good times they keep voting pension benefits and then, you know, say, well, what'll happen if the economy turns down? Well, number one, I'm not going to be in office, or it'll be after my next election or whatever the case of the legislator may say. But also it's, you know, they'd say, hey, that's your problem. You know, that's the mayor's job, the governor's job, the president's job, whomever, to figure out how to pay for it. And the state laws are actually encouraged to promote this. The city came out of the 70s, the big financial crisis, as a state law that prohibits us from having a rainy day fund. And the reason is people who want the city to spend more say, when you have good times, spend it. And then, well, what about bad times? Oh, God will provide.
Yeah, right.
And that's just the real world. The pension benefits, you know, those are long-term benefits. You vote a pension benefit, you're going to that could go on for 20 or 30 years just for the current workforce. And so you say, well, is there likely to be a downturn in the sometime during the next 20 or 30 years? Sure. How are you going to pay for it? Oh, God will provide. We'll worry about it then. So, you know, Jack, the real problem is that everybody, and we're all complicit in it, when times are flush, we say, well, let's do a little more. Let's make the city a little bit better, or do this, or pay our workers a little bit more because they'll work harder, which I'm in favor of. But then there's a downside, and Jack's identified the problem of what do you do and the downside.
All right, Mr. Mayor, I've got another question here in the.
Why don't we try Albert?
You want number three? Albert, go really, really fast. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mayor Bloomberg. With Governor Christie's cancellation of the ARC tunnel, there's now speculation that perhaps the number 7 subway would be extended to the Lautenberg station, Secaucus Junction. Like to know your thoughts on
it. I think it's very preliminary. It sounds like a great idea. Bob Steele, our new deputy mayor for economic development, and his team have said, let's take a look at this. You don't make these kinds of decisions overnight very quickly, but it's something we certainly should look at, and the music's starting to play, so that must mean we're out of here.
Traveling music.
Next week, Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving, we will not be here.
Happy Thanksgiving to everyone.
To you and the Bloomberg family
as
well.
Thanks, you too, John.
All right, we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, and that's going to do it for this week here on the John Gambling Show. I thank each and every one of you. Have a great weekend. Catch up with you Monday.